Even if they walk around clothed, even in the four directions, they still must breathe. They have to eat something. They still must drink. And all these elements are provided by Krishna. So how can actually one be renounced from his dependence on Krishna? It is impossible. But yet, Sukadeva Goswami speaks very strongly that one should be renounced, in that one should not become involved in material activities, or rather one should minimize one's involvement in procuring material amenities. Why? So we can concentrate his consciousness on the spiritual. And by doing that, by concentrating on Krishna and the purpose of life, he can gain eternal benefit in his life. So for that reason, we are also requested, advised to live simply, so that we can spend our life as much as possible strongly endeavoring to understand our eternal relationship with Krishna. We must come to a deep understanding of this before what? Before our next death. Before the curtain closes on this life. So we have a time frame, a time reference. This is the great challenge of life. To be so serious, to not do anything that is extraneous. There was a great American inventor, and the one who invented the light bulb by Krishna's mercy, named Thomas Edison. Did he invent the light bulb? Yeah. He invented so many, hundreds and hundreds of things. And he was deaf, almost fully deaf. And they asked him if he wanted to have an operation to fix it. His deafness, so he could hear again. And he said, "No, I don't want to be distracted." In other words, he clearly knew that he had a purpose in his existence, and he was fully surrendered to that purpose. If we had so much dedication to our purpose, and accepted and rejected according to how beneficial what we did was for our bhakti, that is two-thirds, one-third of the way to full surrender. That is two of the anukalasya sankalpa pratikalasya varjanam. Those are the two very important items of surrender, that you accept everything favorable that's going to make you advance, and reject anything that isn't going to make one advance. This is required. Vyavya satmika buddhi ekya guru nandana bahu shaka tvanantasya buddhya avyasainam. If one becomes many brands, bahu shaka, in one's desires, desiring this and maybe then I'll do that and then I'll do this and then I'll do that, and then when the time comes around, maybe then I'll be serious and take up very strong Krishna conscious practices. So that won't bring us very close. So Sukadeva Goswami spoke very, very strongly about how all devotees, and especially those in the renounced order who by definition must depend on Krishna, how everyone should fully depend on Krishna, not work so hard day and night just to get together the amenities for our life, to maintain body and soul together, and they will all be stolen away by time anyway. That is foolish. Rather, what one should do, Sukadeva recommends, meditation on the super soul. Meditate upon Krishna, who is in everyone's heart. And only one who is the most foolish, gross materialist, will not take this up. Because he sees, everyone sees, that there are so many thousands of people in this world, millions of people, actually there's billions of people in this world, and everyone is endeavoring for fruit of pleasure. What does that mean? Working hard to get something that will be enjoyed for with the senses. That is the basic mode of the people of this world. Everyone is working hard for sense gratification, to get facilities for sense gratification. But are they happy? No. He says the mass of people are fallen in the river of suffering as a consequence of accruing the result of their own work. So rather than becoming happy, everyone falls in the river of suffering. And this river moves very fast. And once one falls in it, it's so hard to get out. So this is what Sukadeva is saying to Maharaj Prakrit. He's speaking so strongly. And then he begins speaking more to further what he said in text 6 about meditating on the Super Soul. Up to text 15, from text 8 to 15, he's going to speak about the process of this, of the procedures and process of this meditation. And this whole section, this chapter is called The Lord in the Heart, because Krishna is the Super Soul, is in within everyone's heart. So through the practice of yoga, the purpose of yoga is samadhi, to have the consciousness, the chitta, the mind, fully focused upon the Super Soul, fixed, just meditating upon Krishna, who is in everyone's heart, and just seeing his beauty and having the mind completely captivated by that Paramatma within the heart, who is fully spiritual. So this chapter dwells on that. And then at the end, through the practice of yoga, and then we'll get to the end tomorrow, if Krishna allows. So, in text 8, he describes, Sukadeva describes the Lord in the heart. Others conceive of the personality of Godhead residing within the body, in the region of the heart, and measuring only 8 inches. And the measurement is from here to here, from the tip of the pinky, small finger, to the tip of the thumb. It's proportionate to the size the Super Soul manifests in that size. And he's with 4 hands, he has 4 arms, and he carries a lotus, a wheel of a chariot, chakra, a conch shell, and a club, respectively. So this is the Lord of the heart. His mouth, now here's a description of this Lord, who one should be meditating upon. And remember again, this is a step higher than the Virata Rupa, which is sort of using the intelligence to see how Krishna or Vishnu is present even in matter. But this is higher, because it is a direct meditation on the spiritual form of the Lord as the Paramatma. And hear how beautiful he is. His mouth expresses his happiness. His eyes spread like the petals of a lotus. Pinkish, beautiful, wonderfully shaped lotus. And his garments, yellow like the saffron of a kadamba flower, are bedecked with valuable jewels. His ornaments are all made of gold, set with jewels, and he wears a glowing headdress and earrings, mukut. He's wearing a crown with glowing jewels, and his features are so beautiful. His lotus feet are placed over the worlds of the lotus-like hearts of great mystics, those who are meditating upon him. His feet are in the lotus of their hearts, because their heart is considered like a lotus flower. On his chest is the Kastuba jewel, engraved with a beautiful calf. And there are also other jewels on his shoulders. His complete torso is garlanded with fresh flowers. So one should be meditating, and this will be in the third canto. This, it's even described even in more detail when Kapila Muni describes the process of meditation of the Lord in the heart to his mother Devahuti. Oh, such beautiful detail, so attractive. He is well decorated with an ornamental wreath about his waist, mekala, a belt, and rings studded with valuable jewels upon his fingers. His leglets, his bangles, his oiled hair curling with a bluish tint, and his beautiful smiling face are all very pleasing. So Sukadeva Goswami wants everyone, as Maharaj Prakrit and everyone else, to understand that God, the Supreme, is not impersonal. He has form, he has features, there's details, there's enough to absorb the mind in great reverie, great happiness, enlivenment, just gazing at the beauty of the Lord. His beautiful smiling face are all very pleasing. Indeed, when the residents of Vrindavan were under Govardhan Hill and Krishna was holding up the hill with the little finger of his left hand, they were satisfied just staring at him, looking at his beautiful features day after day after day. The Lord's magnanimous pastimes and the glowing glance of his smiling face are all indications of his extensive benedictions. One must therefore concentrate on the transcendental form of the Lord as long as the mind can be fixed upon him by meditation. So through the yoga process, and we'll be speaking about the yoga process shortly, one practices for years and years and years, and it's such a difficult practice, actually. And the goal of that practice is to meditate or focus one's consciousness to be so qualified and so pure that one focuses his consciousness upon the form of the Lord within the heart. But to be able to do that in a full and steady way, one has to know the science and one has to have purified his heart. And Prabhupada speaks about the main impurity of the heart in the purport, and we'll come back to that in a few moments. Now he's going to describe, Sukha is going to describe on how to meditate. He's described that the form is within the heart and one should meditate on the form. Now, how should one meditate on the form? In what way? The process of meditation should begin from the lotus feet of the Lord. And it should progress to his smiling face. The meditation should be concentrated upon the lotus feet, then the calves, then the thighs, and in this way, higher and higher. The more the mind becomes fixed upon the different parts of the limbs, one after another, the more the intelligence becomes purified. So one doesn't immediately look at the, to start meditating upon the beauty of the smiling face of the Lord. One has to first purify himself by first meditating upon the lotus feet of the Lord. And that means truly adopting a serving mood towards the Lord too. Unless the gross materialist develops a sense of loving service unto the Supreme Lord, because without having a mood of service towards Krishna, nothing has any value. No spiritual practice truly has any value. All the practices are meant to bring us to that point where we understand that He is the natural, the Lord is the Lord, and we are His tiny servitor. And the mood of service has to be developed. So the meditation upon Krishna when the purification of the heart takes place is really removing the anartas. For what purpose? Because the anartas block the serving mood. The anartas are that fix our consciousness in the mood that the whole universe is centered around me, which is the greatest illusion, and that I am meant to be enjoying. That the world should be based around my enjoyment. This is the greatest illusion. So the materialist, as we heard in the last chapter, what he was supposed to be doing, because he has no spiritual vision, he was supposed to look at the material world and change his attitude from the material world is meant for my pleasure. No, change it to the material world is a part of the energy or the part of the existence of Krishna or Vishnu. To see the material world in relationship to Vishnu, that is called the meditating on the Virata Rupa. So when one goes beyond that, because the problem with meditating on the Virata Rupa, because there is no fixed spiritual form, there is a tendency in that type of meditation to go to impersonalism. That is the great problem with the Virata Rupa meditation. Unless one is already a fixed personalist, one tends to become an impersonalist. So that's the problem with all jnana practices. One tends towards impersonalism. So when one is practicing yoga, one has in one's consciousness the form fixed. So one, at that point, should have developed already a serving mood. And again, the purpose of the Virata Rupa meditation is to cultivate that serving mood. So here in text 14, Sukadeva explains, unless the gross materialist develops a sense of loving service unto the Supreme Lord, the seer of both the transcendental and the material worlds, he should remember or meditate upon the universal form of the Lord at the end of his prescribed duties. So there's a hidden point in there that such people should never give up their prescribed duties because their hearts are not pure. As long as one has a tendency to enjoy in the material world, he cannot give up work. This is one of the essential messages of the Bhagavad Gita. One should not give up work and become a pseudo-spiritualist. Rather, one should work very hard and see Krishna and serve Krishna through one's tendencies and one's abilities, and that will purify the heart. And get one to the point where one has a full-serving mood. Now, let's just backstep a bit. What stops us from developing a serving mood? That is called anartha, or things that we value, that there's no real value to them, but we value them nonetheless, trying to enjoy them. Those are anarthas. So they must be purified, otherwise the serving mood cannot blossom. So in text 12, Prabhupada in the purport explains, the grossest type of anartha, which binds the conditioned soul in material existence, is sex desire. And this desire gradually develops in the union of male and female. When the male and female are united, the sex desire is further aggravated by the accumulation of buildings, children, friends, relatives, and wealth. When all these are acquired, The conditioned soul becomes overwhelmed by such entanglements and the false sense of egoism or the desire of myself. Me, me, me as the center. And mine, mine, mine. This mood, this consciousness becomes prominent. And the sex desire expands to various political, social, altruistic, philanthropic, and many other unwanted engagements. So just see how Prabhupada is connecting, because they're all based on false ego. All these things have just expanded sex desire, selfishness. These unwanted engagements resembling the foam of the sea waves, which becomes very prominent at one time and the next moment vanishes as quickly as a cloud in the sky. The conditioned soul is encircled by such products, as well as the products of sex desire. And therefore bhakti yoga leads to a gradual evaporation of the sex desire, which is summarized in three headings. Namely, profit, adoration, and distinction. All conditioned souls are mad after these different forms of sex desire, and one shall see for himself how much he has been freed from such material hankerings based primarily on the sex desire. As a person feels his hunger satisfied after eating each morsel of foodstuff, he must similarly be able to see the degree to which he has been freed from sex desire. The sex desire is diminished along with the various forms by the process of bhakti yoga, because bhakti yoga automatically, by the grace of the Lord, effectively results in knowledge and renunciation, even if the devotee is not materially very well educated. Knowledge means knowing things as they are, and if by deliberation it is found that there are things which are at all unnecessary, naturally the person who has acquired knowledge leaves aside such unwanted things. When the conditioned soul finds by culture of knowledge that material necessities are unwanted things, he becomes detached from such unwanted things. This stage of knowledge is called vairagya, or detachment from unwanted. All things, again, that are superfluous, that are not fully required for the eternal existence of the soul and for helping the embodied soul, the person in the material body, move forward in spiritual life, these things are unwanted. For the serious devotee who has made the determination that I shall become spiritually advanced, I shall go back to Godhead within this life. So that means that bhakti yoga means cultivating our serving mood to Krishna. Cultivating and clarifying and concentrating our serving mood to Krishna, developing it. So, the first two cantos, Prabhupada explains in the purport, are meant especially to establish us in our relationship with Krishna, accepting that Krishna is the Lord and we are His servant. So, unless one comes to that conclusion, even though it may be immature, unless one comes to that conclusion that I am a servant of Krishna, I may have so many material, but at least I am a servant of Krishna. This is who I am. This is my identity. Then, unless one has that realization, there is no benefit, Prabhupada explains, and going on and hearing the intimate dealings between Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan, which people do. In India one sees this, because Krishna's Leela is so attractive that people who are mundaners, they like very much to hear the dealings between Radha and Krishna, because it resembles the dealings between an ordinary boy and an ordinary girl. Mundane. So they go with their mundane consciousness to enjoy that, not understanding at all that they are Krishna's servant or who Krishna is. So Prabhupada very much condemned this, as did his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And I saw this when I was in Bangladesh, because this Rasalila topics, when people think of the Vaishnava religion and the Christians, and we spoke to some Christians there, and they were Bengali converts, and they immediately brought up, what is this Krishna? You believe in Krishna? Look what he does. Dances with girls in the middle of the night. He's acting in an immoral way. How could he be God? He's God, and look what he's doing. Because people have no understanding who Krishna is. No understanding, no realization, no depth of consciousness. They delve into these intimate things, and therefore it is misrepresented in their consciousness. And then in text 14, Prabhupada says in the purport, the real purpose of life is to make contact with the Lord and be engaged in His service. That is the natural position of the living entities. But those who are impersonalists and are unable to render any loving service to the Lord have been advised to meditate upon His impersonal feature, the Virat Rupa or universal form. Somehow or another, one must try to reestablish one's forgotten relationship with the Lord, if one at all desires to gain real happiness in life. Without such meditation on God, either personal or impersonal, all good qualities of the human being become covered with misconceptions regarding his constitutional position. And without such advanced knowledge, the whole world becomes a hell for the human being. So we're seeing that more and more, and we'll see it still more. The more materialistic and atheistical society becomes, the more hellish and more suffering becomes dominant. Because people become more and more in the mood of exploiting the material nature. And the more one tries to exploit the material nature, the more miserable one becomes. Because it's not possible. We are tiny. The material nature is moving. It is empowered to bewilder us. We lose everything. The more we try to exploit the material nature, we lose everything. We lose all our spiritual power. We lose all our spiritual integrity. We lose our happiness. We lose everything, our strength, physical, mental, intellectual. So after describing how the yogi should meditate upon Krishna in the heart, the super soul, Paramatma, within the heart. And if he, with a serving mood, and if he doesn't have a serving mood, then he should, even if he's an impersonalist, better to meditate upon the Virata Rupa. At least he should have some concept of God. Because without a concept of the Supreme, who do people think is Supreme? They think, I am Supreme, and my needs are most important, and therefore they do the most hellish, horrible things to each other, because they don't care about anyone else. They have no one to answer to. I am important, no one else is important. And the whole world becomes horrible. So, now the topic continues, but it changes slightly. It changes to the yogi who is meditating upon the Lord, and he has decided that through his ability to manipulate his life, the life airs, the yogis, through the manipulation of the life airs, they can even leave this body at their will. They can do amazing things. And we'll be talking about that in a moment. But now when a yogi decides to leave his body, leave this planet of human beings, he shouldn't worry about the proper time or place, but he should sit comfortably without being disturbed and regulating the life air. He can control the senses by the mind. Really, he should not worry about the time or place. And this point is also made in the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Because if we're worried too much about the time and place for a yogi, then his mind is going to be on the time and the place, and it's not going to be on Krishna. And that is, and the focus of the mind on Krishna is really the essence of the practice. So this is a yogi, this is describing a yogi who is so much perfected that he has the capacity to leave his body, die at his own will by the manipulation of the airs, the prana, etc., moving the life air upward and upward and upward. And this will be described. So thereafter, the yogi should, this is the goal of this type of yoga where one is spiritually advanced and leaves the body when he wants. He should merge his mind by his unalloyed intelligence into the living entity. So the mind goes through the intelligence, the mind gets merged into the soul. In other words, the intelligence and the mind and the soul ultimately will have one simple objective. There won't be any duality between the two of them. Now we talk to ourselves, the mind gives us so much trouble. We want to, Narottama Das Thakur says, you tell the ear to listen, it might well disobey. You tell the eyes to look, and then it gets attracted over here and looks over there. You tell the mind to concentrate, and it gets distracted by one thing after another. But when the mind and intelligence become merged with the soul in the sense that they become one with the living entity, and the living entity becomes one with the Supersoul in the sense that Krishna explains in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Dva imal purusha loke chara akshara eva cha kutosto akshara uchate, that the living entity who is perfect, he becomes one with Krishna in desire. So when the senses and the mind through the practice of yoga, and this is the purpose of the practice of yoga, it's not to keep the body fit, so one can be a good dancer or something like that, or one can perform his materialistic activities in a really healthy way, even though it will do that. But the purpose of yoga is to that the body, get the body, the asanas, to make the body fit, because by getting the body fit in this yogic way, it affects the mind and makes the mind peaceful. Well, other ways, if you do aerobic dancing to get your body fit, then your mind becomes continuously jumping up and down with the mode of passion. But if you do this yoga to make the body fit, it so much settles the mind. So when the mind becomes under control, the intelligence and mind become one with the soul's desire to serve Krishna, not going the opposite way, that you want to hear Bhagavatam and the mind wants to decide it's going to do something else, it goes out the window. No. Through this mechanical practices of yoga, and it's mechanical, the process is to line up completely the mind, the intelligence, the soul, to all with the desire of the Supersoul, to serve the Supersoul. And doing that, but after doing this, the fully satisfied, then, only then, and this is what we're longing for, and the word is the Sanskrit word is labdo pashanti. Labdo means get something, you've achieved something. And prashanti means very wonderful satisfaction. So this is what we are looking for. That is the satisfaction that the soul is hankering for. To become one with Krishna in desire, not to have our own independent desires. How I'm the center of everything. Rather, the opposite. That pleasing Krishna is my desire. And that stage is the supreme stage of satisfaction. And nothing else is done. So the yogi, through his yogic practices, does this. And now in the next verse, it describes that yogic, what that stage is like. The next two verses describe that. First it's going to describe it in Vyatirek, in the negative. And that, what, so this is the goal of yoga. The meditation on the super soul with a serving mood. This is the goal of yoga. In that transcendental state of Lavlo Pashanti, there is no supremacy of devastating time. That means when one mind, intelligence, fixed in the soul, and the soul is fixed in the service of the super soul, there is no effective time. And what is the effective time? There's only one effective time, ultimately. It's devastation, crushing. That's not there. And this time, it controls even the demigods who rule. But there is no, when one is living, because that is the platform of the soul, that is the eternal platform. Nor is there the modes of material goodness, passion, or ignorance, no false ego, no material causal ocean, nor the material nature. In other words, there is none of the elements of material existence exist anymore because he is completely hooked up on the transcendental level to Krishna. So this is all the no, this isn't there, this isn't there, this isn't there, this isn't there. In other words, there's not even the slightest tinge of material misery because the modes of nature aren't there, time isn't there. There's no traces of material energy when one is fully immersed in serving Krishna. And then what is a transcendentalist like that who is actually on that level doing? He desires to avoid everything godless, for they know the supreme situation in which everything is related to the Supreme Lord Vishnu. They don't do anything, they don't see anything, do anything that takes them even in a millimeter from Krishna's service. Why? Because they're getting so much happiness from being fixed as Krishna's servant and living on that level, they don't want to deviate from that happiness. It's natural, and that's the natural consciousness. Therefore, a pure devotee who is in absolute harmony with the Lord does not create perplexities. And Prabhupada in his purport describes what those perplexities are. But what does he do? So far it's all what he doesn't do. What does he do? But he worships the lotus feet of the Lord at every moment, taking them into his heart. In other words, he develops his love for Krishna. That is the goal of this yoga. He doesn't create any perplexities. Our acharyas and Srila Prabhupada explains what the perplexities are. The perplexities are thinking. These are, when you think of God, think that he has a material body and that he's ultimately impersonal. That's the perplexity. Or thinking that we are all ultimately God. That is a perplexity. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur uses the word duratmas, or crooked souls think in this way. Crooked means not straight. Not going really in the right direction, but going in a crooked, improper direction. Sort of, maybe, in the general direction, but going off. So impersonalism, or being a, somehow being a non-devotee, or a debauch in the guise of a transcendentalist, thinking that one is God, or God is, or that God has a material body like that. This is all perplexity. This is all the mental activities of Dharatmas. Prabhupada explains in the end of the purport. A pure devotee of the Lord no longer wastes valuable time in discriminating the Brahman from non-Brahman, because he knows perfectly well that the Lord Paramatma, by his Brahman energy, is interwoven in everything, and thus everything is looked upon by a devotee as the property of the Lord. The devotee tries to engage everything in his service, in Krishna's service, and does not create perplexities by falsely lording over the creation of the Lord. He is so faithful that he engages himself as well as everything else in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. In everything, the devotee sees the Lord, and he sees everything in the Lord. The specific disturbances created by a Dharatma or a crooked soul is due to his maintaining that the transcendental form of the Lord is something material. So this is what the Mayavadis think. So this is actually demonic. Mogasya moga kamano moga jnana vachetasa asurim rakshasim jaiva pakushim mohanim shita. Demonic thinking. If who think that abhijananti mamura manushim tanamashrita, that Krishna has a material body. Now, now he's going, after describing the goal, he's described the meditation, and he's described the goal of becoming one in desire with the Lord. Now he's going to describe the how to go give up the body, how to die, a little more about the process of giving up the body by yoga. Now, I'm going to read from two references on this, but first we'll read the verses. By the strength of his knowledge, scientific knowledge, one should be well situated in absolute realization. That means his vijnan, by his deep realization. He should be well situated in absolute realization, and thus be able to extinguish all his material desires. Because if your realization isn't deep, how will you extinguish your material desires? One should then give up the material body by blocking the air hole through which stool is evacuated with the heel of one's foot, and by lifting the life air from one place to another in the six primary places. So there are different chakras within the body. And of course, we must say that in Kali Yuga, practically speaking, no one can perform this type of yoga. Therefore, Mahaprabhu said that we should just chant Hare Krishna. But here is the process in any case. The meditative devotee should slowly push up the life air from the navel to the heart, and from there to the chest, and from there to the roof of the palate. He should search out the proper places with his intelligence. So, this is the this is what yoga is supposed to be. First, it's called Astanga Yoga. The first anga is Yam and then Niyam. This is the rules and regulations. We use the term rules and regulation. The Sanskrit of that is Yam and Niyam. Regulation means Niyam, what you can't do. The rules are the Yam, what you should do. And then, once you're fixed in that, and I'm going to read from Patanjali's Yoga Sutras about what the Yam and Niyam are, the basic Yams and the Niyam, the rules and regulations are for practicing yoga, and see how they work. And then one performs asanas, but I think we'll read from those now. This is from Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, the standard text on Yoga Sutra, on yoga, practicing yoga. This is the Nyams, and he defines the five pillars of the Yamas, or the rules. They are, it's Ahimsa, Satya, Asteya, Brahmacharya, Aparigraha, Yama. Non-violence, truth, abstinence from stealing, continence, and absence of greed for possession beyond one's needs are the five pillars of Yam. Now here's what these do. Very, very interesting. These are unconditioned, he explains. These should be performed regardless of the time or the place. Cleanliness, contentment, religious zeal, shocha santosha tapas svadhyaya ishvara pranidhanani niyama. The Supreme Self or God are the niyams. Principles which run contrary to yama niyam are to be counted with knowledge of discrimination. Intelligence should not let one go against the rules and regulations. Now here's the practices. When one is non-violent in speech, thought and action is established. One's aggressive nature is relinquished and others abandon hostility in one's presence. This is the result of non-violence in speech. This is why one practices these yams and niyams. When the sadhaka is firmly established in the practice of satyam, or truthfulness, his words become so potent that whatever he says comes to realization. When abstention from stealing is firmly established, precious jewels come. When the sadhaka is firmly established in continence, knowledge, vigor, when he's established in continence, which means celibacy, then knowledge, vigor, valor, and energy flow to him. Knowledge of past and future lives unfolds when one is freed from greed for possessions. Cleanliness of body and mind develops disinterest in contact with others for sense gratification. When the body is cleansed, the mind purified, and the senses controlled, joyful awareness needed to realize the inner self also comes. From contentment and benevolence of consciousness comes supreme happiness. What does contentment mean? It means whatever you have, be satisfied with. It's coming by the grace of God, be happy with that. And by benevolence of consciousness means kindness, basically kindness to all living entities. Be benevolent, merciful. What comes from these two things? Supreme happiness, peacefulness. What is it? Santostat Anuttamat Sukkalabha. Self-discipline destroys all impurities, perfecting the body, mind, and senses, so that consciousness functions freely and attains divinity. Svadhyaya, self-study, leads towards the realization of God, or communion with one's desired deity. And then finally, surrender to God. Samadhi Siddha Ishvara Pranidhanat. Surrender to God brings perfection in Samadhi. So that's what happens when one practices the rules of yoga. But there's a danger in practicing yoga. Just like if one practices karma, what is the danger? That one becomes attached to the fruit of one's work. And if one practices Jnana Yoga, even though one gets knowledge of the spiritualness of everything, what is the danger? That one may misunderstand and think that he himself is God. And when one practices yoga, what is the danger? When one practices yoga, one gets so much power, siddhis, mystic powers, and one can become so enamored by this. And Patanjali also explains this, that one can get enamored by this and miss the real perfection, which is ultimately to surrender to Krishna. But one gets enamored by being powerful in this world. And why would one get enamored? Well, listen to what happens when you practice yoga. Krishna explains this to Uddhava. Because Uddhava asks him, my dear Lord Achyuta, by what process can mystic perfections be achieved? And what is the nature of such perfection? How many mystic perfections are there? Please explain these things to me. Indeed, you are the bestower of all mystic perfections. So Krishna tells Uddhava, the master of the masters of the yoga systems have declared that there are 18 types of mystic perfections in meditation, of which 8 are primary, having their shelter in me, 10 are secondary, appearing from the material mode of goodness. Among the 8 primary mystic perfections, there are three by which one can transform one's own body. They are called anima, becoming smaller than the smallest, mahima, becoming greater than the greatest, and lagima, becoming lighter than the lightest. Through the performance of prapti, one acquires whatever one desires. Just imagine how captivating, enchanting that would be. If you could acquire whatever you desire, just imagine how much trouble we would get in at this stage if we had that one. And through prakamya siddhi, one experiences any enjoyable object, either in this world or the next. Through ishita siddhi, one can manipulate the subpotencies of maya, and through the controlling potency called vashishta siddhi, one is unimpeded by the three modes of nature. One who has acquired kamavasayita siddhi can obtain anything from anywhere to the highest possible limit. My dear gentle Uddhava, these 8 mystic perfections are considered to be naturally existing and unexcelled within this world. The 10 secondary mystic perfections arising from the modes of nature are the power from freeing oneself from hunger and thirst and other bodily disturbances, hearing and seeing things far away, moving the body at the speed of the mind, assuming any form one desires, entering the bodies of others, dying when one desires, witnessing the pastimes between the demigods and the celestial girls called the apsaras, completely executing one's determination, and giving orders whose fulfillment is unimpeded. That means that anything you tell someone to do, they have to listen to you. The power to know past, present, and future. Tolerance of heat, cold, and other dualities. Knowing the minds of others, being able to know exactly what everyone's thinking. Checking the influence of fire, sun, water, and poison. Remaining unconquered by others. These constitute 5 perfections of the mystic process of yoga and meditation. Now, next Krishna explains, what is the meditations? To attain these perfections, one has to be very advanced in yoga, because one has to already be at the level where one can focus his mind on anything he wants. And it's by the power of focusing the mind that these yogic siddhis come. So, for example, Krishna says, the yogi who places his mind on my form of Narayan, known as the 4th factor, the Turiya, full of all opulence, he becomes endowed with my nature and thus obtains the mystic perfection called Vasita. That was one of the primary ones. One who fixes his pure mind on me and my manifestation as the impersonal Brahman obtains the greatest happiness, where all his desires are completely fulfilled. So one by one, if one follows the yogic practices, one learns to control the mind and fix it, but the danger is always there that one will become enamored by all these wonderful powers. Even listen to this. A yogi who has purified his existence by devotion to me and who thus expertly knows the process of meditation obtains knowledge of past, present, and future. By devotion he becomes pure. He can therefore see the birth and death of himself and others. So many. Now, I'd like to read just a little more on what Krishna says about yoga. Now, what happens if a yogi, if he isn't healthy enough? Or something like that, or he is disturbed in some way. The physical body of the endeavoring yogi who is not yet mature in his practice may sometimes be overcome by various disturbances. Therefore, the following process is recommended. Some of these obstructions can be counteracted by yogic meditation or by sitting postures, practiced together with concentration or controlled breathing. And others may be counteracted by special austerities, mantras, or medicinal herbs. These inauspicious disturbances can be gradually removed by constant remembrance of me, by congregational hearing, by Nama Sankirtan, all disturbances. This is what Krishna says. He says so many things first, by mantras, by medicines, by herbs. But just remember me and perform Sankirtan, chant the holy names, or by following in the footsteps of the great masters of yogi. By various methods, some yogis free the body from disease and old age and keep it perpetually youthful. Like our Bunky Prabhu. Thus they engage in yoga for the purpose of achieving material mystic perfections. Not like our Bunky Prabhu. This mystic bodily perfection, so all these mystic things which are so wonderful, these are not valued very highly by those expert in transcendental knowledge. Indeed, they consider endeavor for such perfections useless, since the soul, like a tree, is permanent, but the body, like a tree's fruit, is subjected to destruction. Although the physical body may be improved by various processes of yoga, an intelligent person who has dedicated his life to me does not place his faith in the prospect of perfecting his physical body through yoga. And in fact, he gives up all such procedures. The yogi who has taken shelter of me remains free from hankering because he experiences the happiness of the soul within. Thus, while executing this process of yoga, he is never defeated by obstacles. So even if one is practicing yoga, Krishna says, basically, just surrender to me. So therefore, because that is Krishna's desire and the ultimate principle, Prabhupada in his purports always pushes towards that point. So just continuing the last two verses. The meditative yogi should slowly push up the life air from the navel to the heart, from there to the chest, and from there to the roof of the palate. This is the Vishuddha chakra. It tells the distance between this chakra over here, the Anadatta heart chakra, to this one, the Vishuddha chakra. I think it's 15 angulis, something, 15 fingers. And he should search out all the proper places with his intelligence. Thereafter, the bhakti yogi should push the life air between the eyebrows, then blocking the seven outlets of his life air. He should maintain his aim for going back home, back to Godhead. If he is completely free from all desires for material enjoyment, he should then reach the cerebral hole and give up his material connections, having gone to the Supreme. So one through yoga, the purpose is to actually simply go back home, back to Godhead. Questions? So just let me just sum up. In the last chapter, he's talked about jnana and the process of seeing everything in connection with Krishna. And here he's talking about yoga, meditation on the super soul. And he'll go still further. You have a question? Quick one, because we're late.
Will be people of employment in society. These are extensions of sex society.
Because the selfishness in everything. There's a misidentification. Just like we misidentify with our body, therefore we misidentify with our family members. So because we misidentify with the family members, we misidentify with our countrymen. So for most people in the deaf society, they're only concerned with the deaf in Australia. They don't care about the deaf somewhere else. And even if one expands one's concern to all of humanity, how about the animals? So actually, it is the identification with the body as the self that is the root of the problem, and that's where the sex desire exists, and everything else is an extension from that. So that means it really exists in the false ego itself. The false ego, the identification with the body. So all these things are an extension of bodily identification. That's the idea. And as long as one is in engaging in those type of activities, one cannot be free from bodily identification. Srimad Bhagavatam Gita. There's a misidentification, just like we misidentify with our body, therefore we misidentify with our family members. So because we misidentify with the family members, we misidentify with our countrymen. So for most people in the deaf society, they're only concerned with the deaf in Australia. They don't care about the deaf somewhere else. And even if one expands one's concern to all of humanity, how about the animals? So actually, it is the identification with the body as the self that is the root of the problem, and that's where the sex desire exists, and everything else is an extension from that. So that means it really exists in the false ego itself. The false ego, the identification with the body. So all these things are an extension of bodily identification. That's the idea. And as long as one is engaging in those type of activities, one cannot be free from bodily identification. Srimad Bhagavatam Gita.